Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening, Wednesday evening on Rock Sport Radio, and that means it's time for me, Lewis Stewart, with this week's edition of The Lineout, your guide to everything to do with Scottish rugby. And this week there are going to be three main elements to the show. First of all, a look back at last weekend's game against France and that narrow win 17-14, which is actually quite a lot more impressive than the scoreline makes it sound. Then quick chat with Pierre Schumann, the giant Edinburgh prop who has come over to ply his trade in this country and possibly, we never know, become Scottish qualified in time for the next World Cup in 2023. And finally, a look ahead to this weekend's game out in Georgia. And I'm delighted to tell you that I'll be bringing you reports from there because I'm going to be one of the journalists out there with the team as they prepare for what will be a remarkably stiff test against a side renowned for its forward play, its scrummaging and its set-piece play, but possibly not quite as well known for what it produces in the backs. Promises to be a fascinating encounter, but more about that later. First of all, a look back at last weekend and what happened at Murrayfield. The scoreline, of course, shows a win for Scotland, 17 points to 14. Two tries each with a crucial penalty from Greg Laidlaw splitting the teams. But the truth of the matter was that it was actually a much better win than that makes it sound. Both the French penalties came from Scottish mistakes. The first from an interception, the second from a dropped kick, which was run back down the other side of the field. Damien Penner going over for both of the tries. And that really summed up the first half effort from Scotland. They were making mistakes, they were letting the French into the game. But at the same time, unlike the game out in Nice, they were putting in their tackles, they were hitting hard, they were driving their opponents back, they were winning turnovers on the basis of their defence. And the reality was, although it was two tries each, Scotland did have a bit of an issue with converting chances into scores. They scored two tries, they created six, and the others went down to what were fairly crass handling errors in the circumstances. But nevertheless, the fact is that they were still opening up the French defence and they were still creating those opportunities, and you would hope that on another day they would take more than about a third of them. So afterwards, when we started off talking to Greg Laidlaw, the first point to talk about was obviously the quality of that defence. It really was light years from where it had been last week, and that made it something special for Scotland to be able to savour on the day, particularly their captain Laidlaw.
It was good because we won the first match against a good French team, and we talked about the first 10 minutes and starting well, and we've certainly never done that, so we put ourselves under pressure. But the pleasing thing was you could see everybody had clear eyes on the field, listening to what our leaders were saying in attack and defence, and we dug ourselves out of the hole. I thought we held real good composure just before half time to score a try. The crowd maybe thought we were under a bit of pressure, and we'd blew the opportunity. We just took our time and we scored that wide in the end, and that gave us a foothold in the game, and we managed to just claw our way back into it slowly and steadily and get in front, and then our defence won us the game in the end.
What sort of things were you saying to were the other leaders saying to the players when you were 14-3 down? And obviously there was a perception that that might have turned into another example.
Yeah, we were giving the boys confidence because we were defending for large parts really well, and then we essentially switched off twice and they scored two tries, one from an intercept and one was a bit of a turnover, if I remember off the top of my head already. So apart from the two things against a dangerous team, they weren't getting any space. We caused them a lot of problems in terms of they dropped a lot of balls in the first half. So we're defending well, and it was just two lapses of concentration. So if we can keep teams to as little as 14 points, we'll back our attack to score more than that.
second half that was one of the better performances you've seen from a Scotland team, particularly the way that people were taking the ball forward and making ground?
Yeah, I did. It was a real mature in terms of it's test match rugby and it's about outscoring opposition. So that was really pleasing to see. From we just sort of built slowly into the game. We were still behind at half time, and Finn spoke about our past experience when we were just behind against Ireland at half time, and we thought just because we were coming into the game we were going to win it, and we never won that game. But so today to take that step and be patient in the finish zone and get another score in the second half to get in front was brilliant to see.
Was that a set piece move, or was that just made up on the spot?
Well, it wasn't made up on the spot. We've been, you know, trying to construct different ways of scoring in that zone, the finish zone as we call it, and that's a big part of it, you know, or certainly something we work on. Not all the time, you know. We don't want to give secrets away, but it's just about being connected. And there, the forwards are working really hard, and sometimes the backs need to step up and help them out. And Chris Harris done that. He's a big, strong boy, and picked a wonderful hole, and you know, he made my job easy. All I had to do was chuck the pass in front of him, and he, you know, he scored under the post.
Greg Laidlaw on the game in general and how he set up the winning try, or what turned out to be the winning try, for Chris Harris. Before we let him go, though, there are two other issues that we wanted him to talk about, the first of which being the effect of the back row. Now, I'll come back to that later with a little clip on Hamish Watson, and I'll talk more about him then. But in the meantime, the back row in general stifled their French opponent.
I did think the back row played extremely well, and when teams try and start offloading, it's about trying to hit in twos and double tackle and tie the ball up. If teams start slipping the offloads, it's real dangerous, because if you get broken up the middle of the field, it becomes hard then to stop that momentum. So I thought we'd done really well to adjust our defence, stay together, hitting twos. If we slow the ball up, then we can fold round and D and come up off the line again. And so that was the pleasing part. I really believe that our defence pretty much won us the test match.
Greg Laidlaw, the Scotland captain, on the effects of the back row, who won their battle with their French opponents pretty comprehensively. The second issue that I wanted him to talk about was Finn Russell and his growing maturity since he went to France. He didn't, to be fair, have his best game. He made a few mistakes. There were passes that missed their intended target. There was the drop ball that led to Penno's second try, and a couple of other little blips in there as well. But whereas a couple of years ago, he would probably have tried to create something absolutely magical to try and make up for mistakes like that, this time he was happy enough to just keep plugging the corners, keep playing his game, keep doing the things that he does well, which shows how much he is coming on as a player. And of course, Laidlaw, who sees him every week in France, has come to appreciate all of that.
I thought he was excellent today, and I think you can see he's really grown and maturing, and certainly led the team extremely well from that attacking point of view today. And he really mixed it up, and you can kick to win games, and that was part of the strategy today, and he executed that really well, the way Damien Penno and Oliveretti like to defend high, so there's space in the backfield, and if they leave it there, we've got to take it, and he done that extremely well, and with both feet. And then after that, it's about the kick chase.
Greg Laidlaw wrapping up his thoughts on the game on Saturday and that 17-14 win. So next you come on to the coach, Gregor Townsend, his 25th game in charge, and great revenge from his point of view for the result in Nice last week. And like Laidlaw, he agreed that it was mainly the defence that could take the credit.
I think it was 15 turnovers, we said, to the players at half-time through our defence. So tackles that dislodged the ball, putting France's offloading game under pressure. There's risk and reward to that. When it sticks, it is very difficult to defend. But at times when you come up with continual line speed, you'll get an error. So we did that really well. The other side of it was our line-out defence was excellent. So France did have a couple of line-outs in our 22, and our line-out drive defence was very good. They tried a few innovative plays that got them on the front foot, but the next couple of phases we were able to get in place and slow them down, which wasn't the case last week. When they got on the front foot in the first phase, that led to quick ball and momentum in the next two phases.
how satisfied were you with that performance overall?
Performance-wise, I wouldn't know what to rank it. If I felt in the first 20 minutes we were on our game, and that wasn't getting shown on the scoreboard, because a couple of times without possession, France scored off on the back of it. But I just felt with the bite in the tackles, the speed of ball that we were getting, where we were attacking France, it looked like us out there. It wasn't a perfect performance, clearly not that. But what I was really satisfied was the way we found how the players found a way to win.
Have you had to rethink any of the people you penciled in for the World Cup spot on the back of that performance?
Not yet. That'll be for something to reflect on tonight and tomorrow. But just now we were obviously thinking about how the players played and getting the win and seeing where our injuries are. But it certainly helps with momentum, fighting and finding a way to win, and then going on to a really tough challenge next week.
Among your big turnarounds from last week was the scrum. Was that the change of personnel or the change in attitude?
Change in pitch. The scrum was competitive at times last week. It just the pitch made it a lottery. But I have to say, I thought the nudge we had in the scrum in the first half was outstanding. Like, one of the best scrummaging props around is Slimani, and I thought we obviously forced free kicks and penalties in the first half. They did change things up with their pack in the second half. They brought heavier players on. We had to have lighter players putting back rows in there. But very good to see VP on his first game of the season. Became a dad for the third time a few weeks ago, and looking young and strong as ever.
Gregor Townsend, the head coach, full of praise for the way the forwards were able to turn the scrum from a disaster area the week before to a source of strength last week. Which brings me on to my final reflection on the game.
Hamish Watson, discuss. Well, he was man of the match, and for once I don't disagree with the people who called the Man of the Match award. It is quite often just given on nostalgia and things like that, but in this case I think it was absolutely entirely deserved for what was a pretty magnificent all-round performance, and I do mean all-round. There were 16 carries in there, which was comfortably the top by any of the Scots forwards, 21 tackles, no misses, which is a pretty stupendous effort as well, and on top of that he hit 34 rucks, which put him in second place, only a little bit behind George Turner on 34. That pretty much covers the entirety of his duties, and you can't ask for any more than that. So the real question, I suppose, is whether or not we ought to think about taking him to Georgia this week when Scotland play there. But first, the question to ask him was, how much pressure did he feel the team were under leading into that game?
It felt like almost a must-win game in some ways. You know, we hadn't won here since the Italy game, and you know, we had a few close ones during the Six Nations, and there was a lot of pressure on us after last weekend. And it almost felt like a must-win. We sort of demanded a win as a player group, and the coaches also demanded a win. So it was great to go out there and after a tough start face that sort of adversity and get the win.
How much difference does that result make in the build-up to the World Cup looking ahead, compared to where you were a week ago?
Oh, it's massive, I think. If we lose today, it puts huge amounts of pressure on those Georgia games to build momentum, and I think it was really important for the fans as well. You know, our 15th start in a row, I think it was important to give them a performance they deserved as well, and a performance that, you know, our pre-season's been really tough, and after last weekend I think a few people were sort of questioning what we've been up to, and I think we've had a great pre-season, and it didn't reflect well last weekend on us as a player group, and I think it was good to go out there and put it all right.
Wanted to keep that going in the final few minutes when you had that nothing like a real pack out there.
Yeah, John, it's tough. I think a few of the players felt, I can only speak for myself, but I think a few of the players felt like me as well. I was really struggling towards the end of the game. I mean, I don't think some of us boys haven't played since the Glasgow game back in the end of April, so it's almost 3.5 months, so it's good to go out there, blow the cobwebs off of it, and try and get that match fitness back and build the confidence.
Hamish Watson wrapping up our reflections on the game last weekend. But I think it's worth actually breaking out from this for a little bit and reminding ourselves that all of this is about getting ready for the Rugby World Cup in Japan, which kicks off in just 23 days from now. So there's not a great deal of time to get things right. But on the other hand, it's also time, I think, to start looking ahead to what the Rugby World Cup itself might actually be like. So I think it's probably time to hear from an actual Japanese person. Now, lest we get carried away with the mispronunciation of foreign names, I'm going to let him start by introducing himself.
I'm Masamichi Oshima from the Kyoto News, Japan.
Looking at the World Cup coming up, how important an occasion is it for Japan, and how excited are the people in Japan getting about the tournament?
It is like the first time to hold the World Cup in Japan, and it's very special. And you know, the Japanese Rugby Federation wants to, you know, create this kind of the new culture of rugby to Japan also. And you know, the ticket sales are quite good and the atmosphere is getting higher and higher.
I was over in Japan a little while ago. There was quite a lot of branding up already for the World Cup. That suggests there's been a huge marketing effort. Is it beginning to get talked about sort of in the streets and in the cafes and things like that?
Maybe not still in the cafes or bars, but you know, on TVs, there's, you know, many sports news is covering the rugby matches, the rugby training sessions. So, you know, the atmosphere is getting higher.
And it's a big breakthrough for Japan that up until now, the World Cup has always gone to the traditional big rugby powers. It must be very flattering for Japan that you've been given this opportunity to be the first of the non-traditional countries to host a World Cup. Are people really aware of that, or do they think about it, do you think?
I mean, people do know that there's going to be a Rugby World Cup, but they don't. I don't think they actually know that it's the first time held in a non-traditional country.
So it's sort of, they don't quite appreciate the history of it, and they don't necessarily appreciate just what a bigger breakthrough it is.
Yes, there was once a time in Japan that the rugby for university teams was very popular, but now after that, the popular it became not so popular. Because there was like football and other baseball and other sports are coming up. So I think they are, the Japanese Rugby Federation wants to, you know, to cultivate these popularity again.
And it's going to be a big occasion for the rugby team itself, for the 15. It's at home. Does that mean they're under huge amount of pressure to actually deliver a bit of better performance than they did in 2015?
I've heard that maybe there is pressure, but the players all say that it's very honor to get all the cheer from the, you know, the people in Japan to support the Japanese team. So it's going to be a very great help for them.
Particularly when it comes to the last match of the pool stage against Scotland, that's going to be a big occasion for both teams. How exciting do you think that's going to be?
Japanese team are trying to go to the quarterfinals, and so the match against Scotland will be very important. And you know, whether they can win three games or two, it's going to be two. So it's going to be very important.
What was the reaction in Japan 4 years ago? You beat South Africa. You became the first team ever to win three matches and not make the quarterfinals. Was it a big reaction in Japan?
Yes, it was very big. It was like told to as a miracle made against South Africa, and that match was exactly what boosted, you know, the heat of rugby in Japan.
And of course, they've made a film of it now. Yes. Have you seen it?
Sorry, not yet.
But that shows, you know, just how big a breakthrough that was for. And did the people involved in rugby there, like yourself, did you actually feel that change in emphasis going on?
Especially because we knew that 4 years before, there's going to be a rugby held in 2019. So, yes, it is.
Yes. So how much are you looking forward to the World Cup?
It's actually my first time to cover the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup, so I'm very excited to see.
Masumichu Shuma, reflecting on the Japanese attitudes to the World Cup coming up and how excitement is building ahead of the kickoff, now only 23 days away. But there is still rugby going on in this country, even although the World Cup's going to be happening across the other side of the world. Both Glasgow and Edinburgh are going to be playing warm-up matches during September, and their season itself will start at the end of the month. So there is going to be action for you to go along and see, starting, if you are so inclined, with Edinburgh playing London Scottish at Murrayfield on Saturday in a match that doesn't clash with the Georgia game on telly. Now, this is going to be the first match for the new kit that they're putting out. Every season seems to bring a new shirt, and this is no exception. Very similar to last season's shirt, so I don't think anybody's going to be too embarrassed wearing the same one. But obviously enough, there had to be a launch, and this took place in Leith, with Pierre Schumann and Matt Scott asked to do the duties as models. And as a confirmed front row specialist myself, I'm delighted to say that it was Schumann who seemed to be the centre of attention. So when I got hold of Pierre Schumann afterwards, we started by joking about his potential career as a model.
Yeah, like I spoke to the guys earlier, I think I'm the plus size model, so we need some more editing on me than Matt Scott.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the one, the good looking one that they aim to put all the marketing around, that's the one that's going to get more pictures, isn't it?
Yeah, look, in Edinburgh, you have long hair, they have to fiddle a lot with it to get it right. So.
But seriously, the season, pre-season, has been going for, what, about a couple of months now. Has it been for you? Has it been different to anything you had before?
Yeah, it was long, it was tough, but I must say it made a lot of sense. I mean, we had some personal conditioning in the gym as well as on the field, obviously. But then, you know, we had some nice time to get the rugby parts as well, the attack, defence, and especially the set piece, the foundations, and Coach Cocker is hard on that. And I mean, we had a lot of time for the building blocks.
Do you think it'll make much difference when the season starts, and what, about 3 or 4 weeks now?
Yeah, I must say, I think the intensity of the training always will be there, but the load will just be a bit less, and for us boys that's nice, because you have games, you have to focus more on recovery as well, rather than just, you know, having a battering army pre-season.
Now, what difference has it made to your physique? It still looks pretty impressive.
No, thank you so much. I must still eat a lot, but our S&C Lumber is on our case with the weight every day, and then skin folds every 2 weeks. But yeah, I've got a lot stronger, not to tap myself on the back, but Edinburgh Rugby rather, and the S&C team, because there's a lot of emphasis on squats and bench, you know, all the stuff makes us stronger, and in the position we play, you need strength.
So you're lifting more, your arms, your legs, your ball, getting extra bulk in them?
Yeah, and I must say they focus hard on, like, the nutrition-wise, the protein after gym sessions as well, which actually, you know, builds muscle.
It's been a strange pre-season, though, with so many of the players that you'd normally expect to play with not being there. There are the likes of Stuart McInally, Simon Berg and WP and all the rest of it.
Yeah, but to be fair as well, like, there's been guys like Tommy, Dougie Five, Fraser McKenzie, you know, big leaders in the team as well, that's been at the club not only but in rugby a few years. So they experience, they leaders also in the back. So we they help a lot, you know, regarding the big match temperament we have, and how about our culture is about the team and the sessions.
And from your point of view, obviously you know these guys I was just talking about, you know, who are in the Scotland World Cup squad. How do you expect them to fare at the World Cup out in Japan?
Yeah, very good, I must say. Especially, I'm so glad for them for the win on Murrayfield as well against France. That's good, some nice confidence. You can't also have a long pre-season without a win going to Japan, and I'm glad for them. Maybe we'll see them in the Springboks in the semi-final again.
That'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think you said earlier you'd back the referee in that one.
Yeah, rather scream at the ref than aside.
Absolutely. From your point of view, you probably have more experience of it than anybody else. What's it like scrumming against WP in particular, and Simon too, as well?
Now, I must say, like, Simon Bergen is very strong, good athlete, very good in the scrum as well, CP's wise. I also have to say, VP is on another level. I mean, I'd say he's the best I'd I've scrummed against. Just his technique, his strength, and then just his experience as well. I mean, it's something you can't buy. Oh, well, in this modern day, you can actually buy that. But yeah, I must say his experience, like, there's not a certain trick you have against him or he has against you. He adjusts and just, you know, get on with it. And you have to be on your toes all the time.
So how much do you look forward to the Tuesdays when you're up against each other?
Yeah, no, so usually he'll invite me for a barbecue on Thursday. Just, you know, so there's some peace and grace between us for the next Tuesday session.
I imagine that's a big stiff rivalry within the club. The two of you, the battery lumps out of each other every scrum.
Yeah, look, the WPNL won't let a young guy come and show him a few tricks. Neither at the Braai barbecue. he has experience there as well.
A good cook, is he?
Yeah.
But it's been, what, just over a year since you arrived in Scotland? You seem to have settled in really quickly, though. You seem to be enjoying it in Edinburgh and the rest of Scotland as well.
Yeah, I must say it's a beautiful place, especially the nature. We've been travelling a lot all around, you know, with parents and friends visiting, like in the Montpellier boys play here or Toulon. We show them the city. We try to go when we have an off day or off Sunday after church. We try to go like to do some sightseeing and stuff like that. Falkirk and Stirling, all the beautiful places, the west coast as well as the east coast. So it's nice to settle in here. It's a beautiful place. The people, it's very friendly. You know, it's a family vibe, and they love rugby players as well.
Well, I've seen pictures of you in a kilt.
Yeah, but I'm not going to tell you if I wear it properly or not.
Well, that shows you sort of getting into the culture in a big way. You're immersing yourself in what you come into.
Yeah, I must say, like, we've been to the William Wallace Monument as well, mm-hmm. The tower. And on top of the tower, I think our next photo shoot for Edinburgh will be in a kilt for the new kit launch.
Are you bigger than the Claymore in there?
No, we just hope and pray the wind will be settled by then.
Absolutely. But you've also, I think, you've been enjoying the fringe here as well. Tell me about your little contretemps with a magician.
Yeah, so at the fringe, I had to walk over a magician whilst he was walking, lying on glass, and that was an off week. So as a prop, usually you can gain like 5 kilograms in an off week, so it wasn't a good idea for him.
Has it happened yet?
Yeah, I've actually done it, and you know, the fringe is a nice experience as well. I mean, if you Google biggest arts festival in the world, it comes up as the fringe. Everyone knows it, and it's nice to be part of it and to experience it. I mean, we live just around the castle. And to experience all those places and the vibe, it's immense. It's actually just a big privilege. Eh?
That's an important part, though, of what you do. You don't just play rugby. You do travel the world. You do experience all these different cultures and other things in other places.
Exactly. Especially like not only the buildings. People collect books that's made in the 1600s to 1800s or written in the 1600s to 1800s. And yeah, there's buildings of even older than the 1600s or 1800s. And where I'm from, South Africa, was only found like in the 1600s. And we went to a training camp at St. Andrews, and the college was actually founded at the university in the 1400s. So it's stuff like that that's so interesting for us boys coming here, experience everything.
Does it help you settle into and make friends in this area, that you can settle into the culture so quickly and you then settle into the team quickly as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the boys at the club, they've been spectacular. It's such a nice family vibe. And then as well as the church, we settle in a nice church, a nice family vibe. And then just the people in the city as well. You go to shops, there's people from all over the world, but you know, it's a nice vibe in the city centre. And then when you go to the outskirts, the borders, or even like the islands, people there are so friendly. They just want to chat about everything and life and, you know, do life together. It's really a nice place to stay.
And after all of that, and after all your tours around Scotland this summer, that life begins to get a little bit more serious this weekend when you play London Scottish.
Yes, our first heat out full on. We've had some training against Scotland, obviously, and we're going to have some training against Georgia, and we obviously had the training game against Birmingham. But it's going to be so nice to actually play a game full on contact and go through our attack and defence systems, building blocks we put in place.
Future supermodel Pierre Schumann, who I see Edinburgh have decided to nickname Schumann the Showman. Wrapping up the first half of the show, I'm going for an ad break now, and we'll be back looking ahead to the game in Georgia this coming weekend.
At Motorpoint, we put the super into car supermarket. We're here to save the day with a choice of over 7,000 low-mileage, nearly new cars. Find your next car in a flash with our lightning-fast service and same-day drive-away. Plus, with Motorpoint's price pledge, if you find the same car for less, we'll match the price and give you a £50 Amazon voucher. Visit Motorpoint Glasgow today, just 2 minutes from Junction 3 of the M74. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
The list of things you need to do gets longer at this time of year, whether that's for the house or in your business. So tick one thing off your list right now. Your septic tank could need emptied. Let Grant Henderson Tankers empty your septic tank in the home or work, farm, factory or workshop at very competitive rates. We are septic tank specialists, experienced, safe and dedicated to environmental safety with our own licensed disposal site. Find out more at wemovesh.it or call 01698 284 987. Grant Henderson Tankers. Let the experts manage your waste.
William, Pamela and Anthony were sold investments by banks and ended up losing money. Luckily, they contacted Goodwin Barrett and were able to claim back a total of £65,500. If you've lost money on an investment sold by a bank, even if you no longer have it or the paperwork, just text GOOD to 66777 to discover how much you could be owed. That's GOOD to 66777. You don't need a claims management company to make a complaint, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
Joe loves doubles. Joe has a double-barreled surname. He goes double Dutch on double dates, and on those dates he wears double denim. Joe sleeps with a double-down duvet by a double-glazed window and has two fancy cars which he stores in his double garage. So Joe did a double take when he saw our new double quarter-pounder with cheese.
Double lovers, get ready. The new McDonald's double quarter-pounder with cheese is here, but only until the 24th of September. So get there on the double. Served after 10:30 a.m. except in selected restaurants, which will serve this from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
And welcome back to the second half of the show, where we're going to start looking ahead to events coming up this weekend and beyond. But starting with the news that Sam Skinner has been ruled out of the World Cup with that hamstring injury he picked up at the weekend, and Tim Swinson has been brought in as his replacement, with Richie Gray apparently in a position where he felt he had to turn down the offer to come and train with the Scotland squad. A slightly strange position, but I'll let Danny Wilson, the forwards coach, explain what happened.
Well, Greg has been in constant conversation with Richie, but due to family reasons and due to you know, perhaps returning from injury and fitness and stuff like that, he decided that he couldn't commit to the World Cup. So that's Richie. Obviously, Swinno has been part of the squad recently as well. He picked up an injury at the end of the season, but prior to that was playing really well for Glasgow, and so he comes back in to train with us. So that's all it is at this stage, just to come back into training. We've obviously got a few decisions to make around that second row, come back row sort of situation that perhaps Sam offered you that little bit of flexibility. So we've got to look at that. But those are the reasons. As I understand it from Gregor has been in conversation with him for a long time, if I'm honest. And then, you know, I think recently he made the decision that he couldn't commit to the World Cup, as I said, based on sort of family reasons. And obviously he's returned from a long time out with an injury and getting himself back to fitness and so on. So, yeah, that was Richie's decision.
Danny Wilson explaining the position with Richie Gray. But from the point of view of the coaches, it must be a disappointment to be turned down by a player.
Yeah, I mean, from my end, you know, I really admire the player. I think he's been a great player for Scotland over the years, and he is a quality rugby player. Timing does come into these things at times, and obviously that's the situation, and that's a personal choice, which we understand from Richie. But yeah, I've never actually worked with him physically. Obviously, he's not been in the squad since my time with Scotland, but I'm sure hopefully that will happen in the future, but we'll see.
Since Kim does do what Sam did in cover mode for the second row and back row, is there actually a real opportunity, do you think, for him to play his way into this
Well, I think what we've got to look at now is there's other people that can do that role as well. So I think there's a competition between our players for boys who have and can cover second row and back row, or back row and second row, whichever way you look at it. Obviously, on the weekend's game, we had the predicament that not by design, by injury and circumstance, we end up with back row in the second row for the tail end of the game, which wasn't, like I said, by design. But it's making those decisions, and we'll make those decisions in the coming days. And obviously we've got a game on the weekend that will give us the opportunity to look at a few more combinations, which is again what these games are about.
So looking at how important is this week's game up against Georgia?
Yeah, it's big. You know, I think first of all the challenge of going to Georgia is going to be massive. You know, I think we know what Georgia have proved to be. They have been a real handful for size. They've got a big pack of forwards and they play a pretty direct style of rugby. So from a physical point of view, it's going to be a huge challenge. From the away game point of view, which we want to improve, you know, we made no secret about, and we want to be able to go on the road and be far better than we've been. That wasn't the case in France, but I thought the boys bounced back brilliantly on the weekend in terms of turning quite a heavy defeat into a home win against a strong French side. And now our challenge this week is to take that on the road and go and perform in a way that will, you know, make us and the nation proud of the boys from an away performance point of view.
Early days for the two concussion victims. How are they looking though at this point?
We're in a good place right this minute now. I think the protocol has been met so far, but as you know, it's a stage by stage protocol that takes 6 days to fulfil. But right this minute now, the early stages have been good.
Danny Wilson, at least with good news on the Tommy Seymour and Blade Thompson front, with both of them so far at least keeping ahead of the concussion protocols. So lots to happen this week and lots more to happen next week with the announcement of the Scotland squad for the World Cup. And to help me make sense of it all, I have with me Rob Robertson from the Daily Mail. Good evening, Rob. And I think we've got no choice, really, other than to start with the big news of the week. Richie Gray turning down the opportunity to come and train with Scotland. What do you make of that?
Very surprised, Lewis. I mean, there's a suggestion that maybe he wouldn't have gone to the World Cup, and Gregor maybe have made that point clear to him before calling him up. But whether you look at it, he would have been just one injury away from making the World Cup squad, because realistically, Scotland have four second rows sitting, and even if he'd come in training with the squad, if one of the other four picked up an injury, he would have been right in there and on the plane to Japan. And I think we'll maybe touch on it later. Scotland played Georgia at the weekend, then Georgia at home at Murrayfield. If you're ever going to get injuries, I would suggest the big burly guys of the Georgians are the guys who are going to cause the injuries. So I was very surprised he didn't think, well, I'll have a go and see what happens.
On the other hand, Toulouse have started playing. Richie has started playing for Toulouse. Is it possibly just him saying, after all the injury troubles he's had recently, that he doesn't want to mess up his career with Toulouse on the off chance that something might break his way and he gets a late call up to a World Cup that he's been basically told he isn't wanted for?
I hope not. You could be right, but I hope that isn't the case, because I think that's the key, Lewis, because it is a late call-up, so it's not really eating into his time. I believe it was family reasons. His partner or wife has had a child. But it's not eating into too much of his time if you look at it from the outside. I could fully understand, come at the start of the summer, he thought, no, I don't want to be involved in this World Cup. It's too much time away from the family for me. But realistically, you've got two games against Georgia, and I think, you may be able to correct me here, I think they may be even away after the second Georgia game the following week. So realistically, you'd only have 2 weeks to have a go at it, and if it didn't happen, he'd be back home or at a World Cup in Japan and Scotland. I would say that would be worth the risk.
But a big, big opportunity for Tim Swinson. Apart from anything else, he kind of fits in for Sam Skinner on a like-for-like basis. Similar player, not the biggest second row on the planet, but can also play back row as well. Is how big an opportunity do you think?
Timing is everything. Tim Swinson fascinates me because if you remember back to the 2015 World Cup, he'd been injured. He got a game for Glasgow in Canada, and then he got into the World Cup squad off the back of that in 2015. And it looks like, you know, okay, there's still four guys in front of him, but fortune, Lady Luck's fallen his way again, A, through Richie Gray, I assume turning them down, and B, unfortunately, Sam Skinner having to call out. Tim Swinson is now the guy who's one injury away from going to the World Cup. And I would argue probably Tim Swinson didn't expect to be in this situation. Injury hit last year at Glasgow, getting on a bit. I really didn't think he'd be anywhere near this World Cup squad. And here he is, knocking on the door.
Might even be closer than one injury, given that he does come in as a like-for-like replacement. The other four locks are all very much specialist locks, but none of them really cover back row. He does. Does that mean he might be less than one injury away?
It's a very good point, Lewis. I read the press release, the SIU press release, which suggested that maybe he's just been called up to train with them. And certainly a few quotes from Danny Wilson suggest that as well. But I kind of agree with you. I think you could be right. You know, it now wouldn't surprise me, as you say. Gregor went on record to yourself and myself saying that one of the four props had to be able to play in the back row. Now, if I look at these four props that are there.
Locks
that are there. And the only one who can do that is Tim Swinson. So you could argue, you know, of the second rows, you're right, he could actually go straight in there, which would be a credible story for Tim Swinson. And I think you could be right. I really do think you could be right. That if Gregor is true to his word, and one of those four locks has to play in the back row as well, he's your man, through default.
And by the time we're back on air again next week, we'll know the squad. That so if we talk about one or two of the other positions there. Five props. Simon Bergen possibly covering both, and the other two would obviously be WP and Xander Ferguson on the right head. And Eldon, I think Gordon Reid played his way in at the weekend against France.
Totally agree with you.
No problems.
The second row, as we discussed.
The back row is going to be an interesting one. Part of it, I think, depends as well of whether Magnus Bradbury is going to be fit and going to be available, what the position with his ribs is, because obviously he is in a position where he could make a late run in without having a great deal of rugby under his belt.
Yes, but he'd have to play. I mean, it's a good point, Lewis. I mean, obviously, I would argue that Hamish Watson is a stick-on. Is John Barclay a stick-on? Is he? Would you say
he became a stick-on again. I thought he played his way out of stick-on, out in France, and then played his way back in Murrayfield.
So you've got, you know, a couple of players there. I always thought that Matt Ferguson was too young and wouldn't go, but Josh Strauss was rotten against France and Nice. Could he be the number eight? He's got a good chance, I think, of going there. And it really is a tricky one. It's a one for me that who do you pick?
There's so many combinations.
Yeah,
there
exactly.
Well. And of course, the other fascinating one on that is going back to where we were before. Blake Thompson, when he came over, is certainly big enough to play. He's 6 foot six. You know, if he could play lock, has played lock at Super Rugby level. So you could have a back row who covers lock rather than the other way around.
But you could argue, is it a risk? Blake Thompson missed most of last season through concussion. You would have made his Scotland debut last November if he hadn't picked up a concussion that kept him out for many months, and he picks up a concussion. Okay. Danny Wilson, Scotland assistant head coach, said it wasn't a big concussion, but you know, you have to ask yourself, is it a risk taking him? Would you rather take somebody else just to be on the safe side? I would say there's no doubt in his quality, but I would argue that he's only played X amount of minutes for Scotland and hardly at all for Scarlets over the last year. So he's in there on a reputation mostly. So, you know, Is he a guy that I would take? I would probably take him on reputation, but I think Gregor would be thinking twice after what happened with his concussion on Saturday.
The interesting one, though, Jamie Ritchie, discuss. Does he go?
Yes, absolutely. No question. I think Jamie Ritchie is an up-and-coming player, doesn't have the experience, but I really do think he is a guy that could really shine through at the World Cup. I think he did really well in the last Six Nations. I think he's got a potential to hold down a starting place, and I would take him every day of the week.
And he's one of those who covers all the positions.
Well, exactly.
So he gives you that flexibility.
He's got that flexibility, youthful confidence. So I would definitely take him. I would have no question.
Your back five pretty much picks itself. Seymour Maitland, Graham, and Kinghorn, and Hogg.
Yes.
But your centres, that's an interesting one.
That's Chris
Harris put a few cats in amongst the pigeons of the weekend, didn't he?
I was thinking before we came on air that who would I have in the centre? Duncan Taylor's a stick-on. Gregor Townsend loves him. There's a lot of man love there. Chris Harris, for me, has done enough now. You can play in the wing as well. he's there. So that's two for me that are stick-ons. Now, is it too early for Rory Hutchison? Or is it the fact that he can play at 10 as well help him? I think Peter Horan played himself out of it on Saturday. I thought he came back really well from his intercept pass. But unfortunately, you know, that counts at the highest level. Sam Johnson will go on reputation. He hasn't played. He's got an injury, but he'll go on reputation. And if you'd asked me during Six Nations, Lewis, would Hugh Jones definitely go to the World Cup? I would say absolutely, no question.
In fact, I think I did, and you did.
Yes, I did. And now I'm thinking, well, am I convinced? I'm not entirely convinced. I think it will be between him and Rory Hutchinson to actually get that final spot. Because if you take Sam Johnson, if you take the other two that we mentioned as well, Duncan Taylor for one, obviously, I think he might struggle. I don't know if you agree, but I think he might struggle to make that final cut.
Well, I think it's one of those, again, where flexibility comes into it as well. The fact that Hugh really only covers one position. He is a specialist 13, and you have got other players. You've got Chris Harris, who's come in, who covers both. You've got Rory Hutchinson, who covers right across the back division there. You possibly don't need Peter Horan in the sense that if you pick Rory Hutchinson, then you've got that sort of fly half, third fly half covered. You've then got Sam and Duncan Taylor can play across the back
division. Yeah, he can, yeah.
So really the only one, if you take that lot, your only real outright specialist is Sam Johnson.
Yeah. And I think Sam will go just really because Gregor likes him, did well in the
and
Six Nations.
And he did well in the Six Nations. He had a really good cracking gift.
Which really makes you think, you know, could the shock in this setup be Hugh Jones? Could he miss out? It's a tough one for Gregor Townsend, a tough call for him to make. I think it's between him and Rory Hutchison. I've just got a funny feeling it's between just the two of them. And has Rory Hutchison done enough to make the World Cup squad?
My problem with Rory Hutchison is not his ability as a player or anything like that, but he's only had about 30 minutes of international rugby.
Well, exactly. And also, he only came into the reckoning through a late run at Northampton Saints at the end of last season. So has he done enough? I'm not convinced. The only downside is one of the watchwords that you and I have been hearing throughout this so far has been the word defence. Now, even Hugh Jones has admitted his defence isn't great. So will that count against him? I think he will. And if he improves his defence, he'll get a better chance. But it's not great just now, so really has to improve that to try and get in. This will be a test for him this weekend. I'd like to see him play against Georgia, because if you can defend well against Georgia, you can defend well against anybody.
Yes, and which brings us to the game this weekend. A lot of players possibly in there, very much. We've talked a lot about Last Chance Saloon, but this is whatever's after Last Chance Saloon.
Oh, this is it. I mean, this is it. I mean, if I was a player like Finn Russell, who I think would be out there, Alvin Bell, who's going as well, I just want this game over, because these guys are going to go to the World Cup. They don't want to pick up injuries. But there are guys like Rory Hutchison that we talked about, guys on the cusp who will be desperate to play this weekend just to try and give themselves a chance of making the squad. And it's these guys that have the Last Chance Saloon. I can't imagine we'll see Josh Strauss or Jamie Batty again. I don't think they did enough in that game against France. I think their chance is gone. So it's people in the middle range who are just on the edge that we'll probably see. It'll be interesting to see if Fraser Brown and Sam Johnson, both of whom haven't played in the matches so far over the summer through injury, get a run out against Georgia. I think they maybe need one just to prove their fitness. As we were talking about earlier about Sam Johnson, he'll definitely go. But one good performance under his belt will do him no harm at all. Fraser Brown, it sounds very trivial saying he had a toe injury that's kept him out since the Pro 14 defeat against Leinster at Parkhead, but it's obviously been a bit more serious than that sounds, because he hasn't played since. And realistically, you need a decent backup to Stuart McInally, and for me, Fraser Brown is that backup, and he'll go along with George Turner as the third hooker.
And obviously, Danny Wilson talked about it at the media briefing, that the line-out wasn't great at the weekend. Stuart McInally obviously has great affinity with Grant Gilchrist in particular, and he's played a lot with Johnny Gray and Ben Toulis. That Fraser is probably a better thrower than George Turner, that's going to mean that he's pretty much a shoo-in as long as he proves his fitness before they fly.
That's absolutely it. I mean, he has to prove his fitness. And again, it does sound trivial to me. It's a toe injury, but it must have caused him so much problems that he needed surgery on them.
Yeah,
he needed surgery on it. So, yeah, you know, he does obviously need a run out. They might, again... Would I take him to Georgia? I'd like to see him getting around one of the two games. Maybe I would leave it to the final one, just for the reason that you mentioned, i.e. he's definitely going to go to the World Cup, and he just needs one game. Maybe a risk taking him against the good old Georgians, who no doubt realise he's got a foot injury and make full play of it and try and stand on his foot in the first minute. But certainly the final game at home, I think I'd maybe save him. I'd maybe give George Turner a start and see how he goes.
How important, finally, do you think it is that they actually try and get an away win under their belts before they travel out and they play four matches, three of them in a neutral venue and one of them which will be very firmly an away match?
I think it's vital. It's vital that they get some sort of momentum, because I really fancy Scotland to win against Georgia and Murrayfield. They need a wee two-game run going into the World Cup. I think that's great. That would be fine going in against Ireland. But you don't want to be bullied against Georgia. And if you're ever going to be bullied against Georgia, it's going to be in Tbilisi in front of a sell-out crowd as the first Tier 1 nation to play there. Now, if you put all that together, they will be so fired up that Scotland will better watch out what they're doing, or they could come away with a bloody nose or even a defeat. I mean, I'd like to think that's not going to happen and that the gap in quality is wide, but it's vital they come away with their knowing they can win, because the confidence boost they'll get playing in such a hostile environment and winning will be huge heading into the World Cup.
On the other hand, the Georgia pack we know is pretty much as good as anybody else's in international rugby, and they mostly play in France, so there isn't going to be any shortage of physicality there. But if there is going to be a team that can beat Scotland up and bully them, then Georgia are going to be pretty close to the top of that pile.
Oh yeah, I mean this is a huge test, an absolutely huge test for the Scottish pack, which you could argue has been underperforming. A few guys have been dropping off occasionally. So this is the game that really have to stand up and be counted. But there's a fine balance. They want to be stand up and be counted, but they also want to come back in one piece and not be ruled out the World Cup, which has been the case for the unfortunate Sam Skinner, who we discussed earlier, who Tim Swinson's in for. So, you know, let's hope Scotland come back with a win, and more importantly, a clean bill of health from Tbilisi.
So that's it from Rob Robertson, and that's it from me for another week. I'll be back next week, where I suspect I will mostly be concentrating on the announcement the day before of the squad that will be travelling out to Japan. But in the meantime, the clock has beaten me yet again. Good night.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.